Hello everyone, this is Mike Quinsey, Connecting the Light. Well, I'm pleased to be back with you. Time, as usual, seems to go flying by faster than ever. And this week is one where I've got a really full file of articles and messages to read through. I'm very pleased to say I usually have much more than I can cope with in one program. But that's nice because that gives me a good selection. Sheldon Neidl is back now with his regular messages, and I've got one this week which I will start with. But I will follow that up with a very good one that's come out a little earlier than normally anticipated from Matthew. And for anyone who listens or gets Matthew's messages will know that the content is very topical and extremely good. So without further ado, I'll start with this week's Sheldon Neidl message, which is an update from the spiritual hierarchy and the Galactic Federation. They're talking about how their operation has from the very beginning been a matter of sudden accelerated steps, which have often been countered by many four steps backward. And they have acknowledged the fact that this uneven pace can be frustrating. They say, and I quote, "At present, we are at a stage where progress is being made on numerous fronts. When considering this incredible project, it is necessary to comprehend its vast international scope. As noted in previous messages, the intent is no less than to transform the global financial and banking system. Our Earth allies are saddled with literally well over 100 countries and a plethora of banks, loan institutions, and similar financial organizations. A great deal of important personal conferencing, protected, confidential memoing, and secured video conferencing goes on daily between thousands of individuals involved in this procedure. The outcome of all this is a steady rate of progress towards your predestined victory. Let us look at some of the obstacles that have so far been cleared. The most consequential one to date was achieved in the first 2 years of this decade. In order to challenge the Dumbarton Oaks Agreement, it was first necessary to get some of the major central banks of Europe and Asia to decide to work towards creating a new global financial network. This goal was reached when Europe and a few major Asian banks joined together to form a secret task force to forge such a document. This working grew swiftly in scope and in numbers in the last 2 years. Your world's financial instability increases by the day, and this factor greatly accelerates the need to produce a new financial prototype. With this new model in mind, our Earth allies were able to make many political alliances. These in turn have made it possible for the IMF to declare the prosperity program allied with this monetary shift to be true humanitarian projects. By late 2005, the new financial plan had acquired a large degree of legitimacy, which was further bolstered by a number of conferences convened to address ways to dismiss the humongous third world debt. Everywhere progress has been made and being made swiftly. The political agreements are the most significant of these diverse objectives. Bear in mind that the last cabal has long used its great clout to maintain a position of power. The Bush regime is simply another extension of the age-old strategy. Despite its recent illegitimacy, the present American regime holds an imposing vice on the world's movement of funds. This led a group of sovereign, wealthy Americans to start covert programs to oust this sorry regime from power. Several groups in the government seeking the same outcome quickly joined them. These two groups in the past year enlisted a third, a military coalition of senior officers who wish for a rapid transformation of present US global objectives. This faction has many friends inside government and even within the exalted halls of the wealthy and influential where US foreign policy is really made. These elements have found many willing and ready to forcibly eject this unconstitutional regime. Nevertheless, this dedicated group of patriots required a friendly foreign element to achieve its goal. This was secured in the document we know as the 1998 Agreement. And I would just reread one of the last comments there, because I think it's very important to note it. And I repeat that these elements have found many willing and ready, and this is the point I want to emphasize, is forcibly eject this unconstitutional regime. Now, that clearly to me implies a legal way in which to do it. And I think it's very heartening to learn that it appears to be that far advanced at this time. Now, the report this week reads on, this foreign element is to be found in a group that has long been part of the European power structure. These lesser royals, children of the ultra-wealthy and members of powerful political families, have a common goal: to overturn the present global system and replace it with a more equitable one. They form the very core of our Earth allies, and in the past year have begun to liaise with their American cousins. The upshot is a set of new relationships geared to ensuring the success of the rapidly maturing American movement to oust the present US regime. Added to this are a series of agreements that have drawn in the World Court and numbers of other major international organizations. These highly secret negotiations are still ongoing and are one of the major points still delaying implementation of what we are discussing with you. At all times, keep in mind that this momentum for change is like a very complex chess game. Every move has a reason, every stratagem can be altered by the next series of moves. This movement is fully aware of the political and financial matrix that currently exists. This matrix reaches out everywhere to dominate the many and allow control by a select few. But it is now rapidly approaching its limits. Global warming, economic disharmony, and widespread militarily invoked instability cannot go on much longer. Your planet is reaching a point where the ecosystem needs to redress these imbalances. As you know, Mother Earth wishes your much-needed shift to be as smooth as possible. She has warned us that a more manageable planetary surface is essential to her. Her cry has prompted us to inform you of this and to tell you that this request has heightened the urgency among our Earth allies to complete their objectives. At present, a number of situations are making it possible for this great global shift to take off. Major events on your world tend to happen suddenly and to come out of the blue, for most. Such is to be the case here. Yet you do not abruptly change the course of the world without a comprehensive and meticulously thought-out plan. Remember also that a massive consciousness shift is underway. This shift creates an environment that both senses and wishes for an end to the current iniquities and a substitution by a fair and balanced system. And this is indeed next on the agenda. The energy of this discontent is ready to manifest its desires and provide the means to accelerate this process once it starts. Thus your world in many ways resembles France just before the revolution. The difference here is that this turn of government is to be a bloodless, quiet revolution. The legal precedent for what is to happen in the US and the world has already been covertly set by these major legal organizations that we touched on. The need for this circumspection lies in the fact that the remaining dark cabal can only be removed by means of great stealth. Despite these strictures, the work progresses and is close to completion. What has been accomplished to date is monumental, and the last parts of this intricate undertaking are in their closing stages. The present final fling for the dark, the powerful, and the greedy on your planet is quickly coming to an end. This movement toward freedom is inextricably tied to the ending of the UFO cover-up and the actual landings of our personnel on your shores. Over the past few centuries, the dark developed its means to override heaven's edicts concerning you. It wanted to permanently enslave you and prevent heaven's plan for your revival. Now its goal is to be dashed due to the marvelous abilities and wise strategies of heaven and the wonder that is first contact. We look forward to the time ahead. However, we fully understand the eccentricities of the dark. Nevertheless, we confidently expect this time for some truly remarkable announcements to be not far off. What is currently required is simply a source of satisfied patience, that is, a foreknowing of what is to happen, and a willingness to let it happen as divinely planned. And in conclusion, today we continued our discussion and what is surreptitiously going down on your world. We ask you to stay informed and to be discerning of all that goes on. Rumor, innuendo, misdirection, and misinformation abound. So be prudent, discriminating, and above all, listen to your intuitive inner self. She is the key to unlocking any puzzlement that may unexpectedly come your way. So that's it for this week on Sheldon Neidl's message. I think of necessity there is always a repetition of some of the facts, but I think nevertheless it's nice to keep confirming what the position is. And yet having said that, there's always a little bit of new information. Keeps us going, I think, until the great time of the change is seen to take place. But it is heartening to know that completion is near. Now, this week, Matthew came out with a special message about September 11. And it's obviously appropriate. I suppose one might have guessed that he would have something to say on the anniversary of the collapse of the Twin Towers. He started off by looking back and saying that 5 years ago this day, your world was in shock, and people of all nations were united in the mourning that seemed seemingly senseless, unconscionable act of terrorism. Now voices are rising ever higher, asking for the truth to become known. It will, and when it does, many will experience another shock when all the reasons are revealed. But today, there are ceremonies honouring the souls whose lifetimes abruptly ended 5 years ago, and finger pointing to the phantom enemy that caused the tragedy. The hypocrisy in the speeches of those who truly were responsible may enrage you who recognise their complicity. Yet there is much more fear in those people than the apparent arrogance. It is true that their greed and power lusting let them plan and execute those diabolical events. But there is more to this than is understood in your world. And Matthew said, Mother, please copy the part of the book with my explanation. And the most important words of all, the poignant plea from the spokesperson for the people who died in the burning, collapsing towers. That message which echoes the sentiments of all of us in this lighted station in spirit is the most essential for you to hold foremost in your minds. And so it reads that the spiritual response to terrorism, which was in Revelations for a New Era, read as follows. My thoughts as I stared at the television newscast that morning on September 11, 2001, were not about the lives lost, but about the people who loved those souls. Having endured the pain of Matthew's sudden death, my heart was with the families and friends of those who had just left Earth so abruptly and horribly. During the subsequent days, memories of my long-ago anguish evoked such powerful empathy for all of the people in shock and grief that I didn't even want to ask Matthew what had happened. His answer couldn't have changed anything. Then I received an email from someone who knew about my telepathic connection with Matthew. a man representing the group who died in New York City, had wakened her, coming to her as sometimes her patients did as they transitioned between earth and heaven. He said they want to be known as martyrs for peace, not war, that the terror was from within our country, not outside, and they were requesting a collective voice through Matthew. And on September the 16th, 2001, Matthew said, I've just heard from Kalama Hawkrider that a representative of the group who made transition in New York spoke with her and said, I would like to have a voice through you. I don't know if you are aware of this message she received, but if you do have anything you'd like Gene Hooden and Russ Michael to send out, I'm sure they would do it. That was, of course, Susie Ward, Matthew's mother, talking to Matthew, not the other way round. And in reply, Matthew said, yes, Mother, I have a message to pass on, and there is something I wish to say from this vantage point. Please, all souls who are receiving divine guidance for maintaining love, compassion and peace, do not let up for a moment these heartfelt emotions. This energy will be the saving grace for you and your planet, and in a moment, your beloved family and friends who have so recently come here will speak of this in their words. All the souls who made transition so abruptly are being tended most lovingly here. Many already are feeling familiarity with this realm and are remembering that they knew this was to happen, and they agreed at soul level to participate. But even if that can be believed, it is small comfort to those whom they left in such a shocking and horrifying ending, with no goodbyes for the thousands and thousands of people who love these souls. Beyond assuring you that peacefulness, tenderness and understanding is enveloping every person who departed Earth, then I want to assure you that despite what appears to be, yes, the light is prevailing over the darkness. That is precisely why this evil incarnate has been perpetrated upon your planet. The desperation of the darkness has triggered this seemingly inexplicable agony and inspired the calling for war as justice for those who died. But the war actually is to generate even greater and greater negativity on top of that created by global grief in an attempt to dilute and then extinguish the light. These forces want you to be in fear, in hatred. They want you to demand justice through killing, war and destruction. These dark forces know that the cycle of violence will increase their pernicious hold in these times of critical choosing between the light and darkness, and choose you must, and choose the light you must. We weep here, we see the larger picture, indeed, but still we weep. Who could not do so in these days of agonizing sorrow and despair, but know that you must hold fast to feeling love and compassion to an extent that is not understood by most. This is not a nation against another nation. It is not even a small faction of humankind seen as diabolical against other humankind. It is not human elements at all at the root of what happened. It is a power that most of you don't know exists that caused this madness. With such dark intentions that Earth itself is weeping that these powers have descended in their fiery destructiveness. This will be revealed in time, in the days now, before you can clearly see what is behind the madness. Please hold only healing love in your hearts for all mankind and beyond to all life. Let the God Self in each of you rise into the darkness instead of letting your conscious self join with the darkness in retaliation, revenge, hatred, or cold-hearted killing. Think of the thousands of lives that left Earth in those fiery moments. Let those lives stand for something besides what the dark controllers want, more killing of innocents. Those lives were not taken in innocence, but let them speak out for the innocents. As a collective voice, they are saying, and I quote, let no more lives be taken. This is a time to keep love above all. For for compassion, for bringing healing to the bereaved and injured, for bringing healing to us. Please know that the hearts that are hardened into wanting to kill others as their tribute to us, they need light above all. We petition you from the whole of this realm of heaven to speak of love, of opening eyes to see clearly what is happening on earth, and rising above the tragedy that has been perpetrated by a darkness you cannot even imagine, where your entire world is expendable. We see this from here. We need you to help the myriad light workers by uplifting your hearts and allowing light to come in, by comforting those in fresh sorrow. You must hear our plea. We are working in the light to assist you, and we are forever bonded with you in love. And Matthew said, "Yes, Mother, I know that you find it difficult to believe that I was chosen to pass on the message for these souls. I'm not alone in this, nor am I only passing on their collective voice. I am also speaking for the Council of Nirvana and all other souls in this realm. Others are speaking out in other realms, other higher stations in the light, and we are all beseeching you to choose peace and love." So, further extracts appear in this message from that period of time, and we move on to September the 22nd, 2001. And Susie said, "Am I right in thinking that you want to add something to the collective voice message about September the 11th event?" We left off abruptly the other day after I received that. I wanted to get it on its way quickly, and you know how busy I've been since then with our guest. And Matthew replied, "Yes, I know that, Mother, and I thank you for getting that message out. I know you're uneasy about what has been transpiring and are speculating whether your caring feelings but lack of deep anxiety is reasonable, or you're hiding your head in the sand. Your abhorrence at the merciless manoeuvres and your sorrow for the grieving families are natural reactions. But fear not only is the opposite of the emotions that will help heal the personal and national wounds, it also would be fuel for an outcome you don't want. The events as they have been unfolded for the public view are not the ideas of those men the media are proclaiming as terrorists. Well, government officials are proclaiming that, and the media are echoing it. There are hidden causes and goals, hidden strategies yet to be revealed, and the perpetrators are not those who were so quickly accused. We understand why many souls there believe without questioning whether reports were complete and accurate, or even sounded liberal. We understand that acceptance instead of analysis was due to the enormity of the planes deliberately hitting their intended targets, and the thousands of innocent lives being in transition almost simultaneously from Earth lifetimes. The emotions of accepting these kinds of actualities are too overwhelming to permit the mental or emotional margin for wide questioning of the obvious weaknesses in the official findings. And Susie replied, "I have read quite a few reports that blast the official conclusion, so some people definitely are not accepting all of this as it's been publicly presented. Can you tell me without wavering at all that the towers would not have collapsed if there hadn't been explosives set off?" Matthew replied, without an iota of wavering. And Susie said, "Why?" Matthew replied, "The destruction had to be in such an unthinkable measure that its horror could be filmed. And there's a questionable area why television cameras were present even in early moments and aired relentlessly in these days ever since. There had to be such shocking loss of life that it overshadowed speculating about the improbability of the towers collapsing due to the stated reason. Or think too closely about how the half-full planes were taken over and flown unmolested into their targets in supposedly safeguarded airspace. Has any refutable evidence been presented to prove the official conclusions? No, because there isn't any. Quite the contrary. The immediate declaration of this is war rather swiftly served into the spirit of patriotism, and that has called on fire. This will do just as well to serve the real perpetrator's interest, because it too precludes a public outcry for proof of the official conclusions. Those they need to accuse as the monstrous evildoers have to be the natural suspects, ones who have been built from high ground up through covert and overt means for decades. The dark minds behind this don't deal with spontaneity. They deal with calculations and strategies developed over decades. If not plan A, then plan B. If not the persons originally in charge, then those two or three or four generations later who share the same dark dreams continue to manifest them. This steady march, with only the names changing, never the aims, has been proceeding throughout millennia, which in the estimation of the darkness is acceptable, and the timetables need not be rigid. However, the call for war was the purpose from the beginning. The terrorism is the fuel needed to rally public support for war. Those thousands of deaths, September the 11th, that were needed to achieve this support are inconsequential to the dark forces whose nature does not encompass conscience, honour, compassion, love or empathy. The unconscionable, brutal attacks that the darkness manipulated through their willing puppets had to be tied into something that could be presented as so pervasive and so fearsome that the whole world wants to eliminate it. Global terrorism. So that is exactly what the dark forces had to create, so that the next could come the world's fear of it. Not only can fear generate national and perhaps global unity in a rare instance of agreement, but it creates the negativity that is the foundation and armament of the masterminds of darkness. And that is the real prize. Light cannot coexist with negativity. And fear is one of the most powerful of negative emotions, an opposite of light in vibratory composition. So you can understand why increasing the amount of fear throughout the populace is essential to the plans of the dark forces. But fear is only their penultimate goal. Total planetary conquest is their ultimate goal. What happened September 11th is really only another strategic move by the dark forces in their ages-old conflict with the light forces as to which force will rule the planet. It sounds like a science fiction plot, like a sorcerer's tale of diabolical conjuring and treachery, but it is much more real than any of those steel and concrete structures on Earth. The peak of the dark forces is not resident upon your planet, and although it can and does manifest in human bodies that look no different from any others there, the civilization's origin is not human. This force is more accurately considered a force field or energy mass that has the ability to embody in whatever form it wishes. So long ago as to be lost to all memory except creators, this force left the light and love in which and of which it was created. And ever since it has been wounded by the absence of light and love. The only way the wound of that void can be healed is by refilling it with its original ingredients. But if this force accepted the healing love and light, it would have to forfeit its dark power. And it has not been willing to do that. And so, in its tormented and demented journey throughout all time, it sustains its power by seeking and creating fertile grounds for birthing negative emotions. Now you can see that it is the influence of the dark forces behind the call for vengeance, revenge, retribution, the sense of justice that means more violence and killing. Never will that approach eliminate fear. Never will it eliminate feelings of bitterness, unfairness, deprivation, betrayal. Never will it stop infants from growing up to become martyrs. Oh, far from eliminating the causes of terrorism, those acts refuel the cycle of negativity and ensure the survival of the darkness through bloodshed, hatred, terror, anxiety, tyranny, prejudice, insecurity, grief, death, imbalance, deception, and corruption. The dark forces beyond Earth have many minions on the planet willing to do their bidding there, and their weapons are everything that creates negativity. The powers opposing them are the light forces whose arms and armour are love, compassion and truth. And Susie said, "Do you know how this is going to play out?" And Matthew said, "We know that God is not going to let your planet be destroyed, Mother. It is not within our province to change the course of events and our emotion. But it is within the province of those extraterrestrial civilizations who have been called into action by God to preserve Earth with their technology that can dilute or negate certain types of destruction or pollution. So there is no need to think in terms of mass annihilation by nuclear or biological weaponry. Any talk in those terms is specifically designed to instill fear in the populace. And you know why fear is of utmost importance to the dark forces. The fact is, from our vantage point, all of the evidence of military might and tough rhetoric shows it is desperation time for the darkness. It is their own fear, recognizing that they are losing their strongholds on the planet, that is behind these brutal assaults on Earth's people and her very spirit. So moving on yet again to October 15th, 2001, Susie started the contact by saying, "Matthew, please tell me what is happening behind the scenes of this war on terrorism and the anthrax scare." And Matthew said, "You use the most appropriate word, short of fear, when you say anthrax scare. That is the total purpose, to scare you into believing that these isolated and staged incidences of anthrax terrorism in your country are the beginning of global biological terrorism. That is a tactic, a ruse, and the world's media..." Just have a drop of water there. I'm getting a bit of a dry throat. So I'll just start that last sentence again. This is a tactic, a ruse, and the world's media raving about the fright is designed to start the fear chain reaction that the masterminds of the dark forces desire. Matthew said, think about this. The media start talking about the political fears that the next terrorists will wage biological warfare. And next, so quickly as to be amateurishly staged, anthrax does turn up, and an innocent soul dies. Subsequently, powder turns up on the floor, or on a typewriter, or in an envelope, and through preconditioning, you instantly suspect it of being anthrax spore laden. On rare occasion it is, but in people's minds now, any powdery substance anywhere, in any minuscule amount, instantly is associated with a possible global assault. If death to the infidels is the aim of the terrorists, and since death as martyrs is part of their fanaticism, then mass annihilation methods probably would be just fine with them. But to the perpetrators of this fear tactic, that is not acceptable. Anthrax cannot distinguish between the non-human perpetrators disguised in human form and the human DNA strains, nor between the dark forces, willing human workers and the light beings, so they cannot endanger themselves and their cohorts, and thus only carefully planned isolated plants can be allowed. This is a multi-thrust effort that needs little staging other than what you have heard about. More incidents may come, but very strategically selected and only enough to keep the fear alive. Fear is the intent of this, not mass death. Once the fear level has reached saturation, vaccines will be made available so that a plague will not befall those who are thus protected, or so it will be announced. Without antitoxins for everyone, there could be frenzy to get what small supply there is, and so fear can be sustained within the majority of people because they will not qualify for inoculations. But it is the lucky ones who will not make it to the front of the vaccination line. Mother, it is a diabolical plan indeed, but in truth, the intent and results of this anthrax matter are much less harmful long-term than the virtually unquestioned regular ongoing pollution of your air, ground and water from the chemtrails, as you have termed this practice of seeding the atmosphere with toxins. All of these vicious acts are desperate measures to extinguish the increasing light, or at least diminish the number of souls who are awakening. Fear and frenzy can throw those awakening souls right back into their cocoon of spiritual slumbering, and that is the plan, the purpose behind these acts, seen and unseen. The war is another matter. That too is sinister, of course, but it is with a vehemently declared intent to destroy a country, a whole population if necessary, for the good of all other countries. Both the specific country and its people are expendable, as it is simply the land, not even required to be habitable, that is the goal. Oil is the further goal, and the land is the pathway to it. So you have two opposites in this, the few expendable lives to initiate and perpetrate as long as possible the fear of potentially global biological terrorism, and an entire nation of people who are expendable because their country's annihilation is to eliminate terrorism for the good of the world. The similarities are that both situations are perpetrated by forces that you have no idea publicly are in this at all. And the purpose is the same, the creation of dense negativity. Negativity is swirling from the violence, the killing, the terror of the war's victims, the grief of their survivors, the fear of the innocents all over your world, the intensifying hatred of those who are accused and hunted. And Susie said, how damaging have the events of the past weeks been to the light forces? Matthew said, I cannot say that there has been no damage at all, because the shock, grief, horror and fear that started with the collapsing of the towers has not abated very greatly in this time. However, the additional light has been pouring in from throughout the galaxy and beyond to shore up the ever-increasing light generated and held fast by light beings of Earth is in greater abundance than before those events. That is why it is mystifying about the dark forces. Those living among you are superior intellectually and technologically to Earth's third density humankind, but they are devoid of spiritual comprehension. They are close to having no light in their souls except that spark of the Creator's connection, and this is by their choice, as they consistently refuse to accept the light that is continually offered. They do not seem to learn that a godly nature can manifest infinite possibilities simply by being godly or light-filled. Beings ranging from fourth to seventh density in intellectual, technological and spiritual evolvement also are inhabiting your planet in places beneath, on or above the surface. Many are members of your universal family who you can thank for generating light and also anchoring vast shafts of light beamed from advanced civilizations off-planet. There has been confusing talk of the critical mass that needs to be reached before Earth can ascend. It is not the number of souls, not a percentage of souls residing on the planet that constitutes critical mass, but rather the degree of light that can be sustained there. That mass has been reached and surpassed, and ascension, however misunderstood, is happening. Earth is in her ascension process, and all souls who have been receptive to the light and been changed from cellular structure on, out or up are increasing in spiritual clarity by the moment and are ascending with her in spirit. And Susie said, but the complete ascension process is physical too, right? Matthew said, absolutely. It is not a journey like any other you can consciously relate to. The physical ascension phase, which will follow the planetary riddance of negativity and the individual soul's final choices, is not yet on the near horizon, but even in linear time is definitely sooner than later. The more souls who awaken soon, the more gentle will be the cleansing to achieve the release of negativity required prior to physical ascension. The beginning of that phase will be unmistakable. It is planned that it will be preceded by your extraterrestrial friends who eventually will reveal themselves instead of remaining disguised among you as they must now for safety. The souls who have declined to accept the light will simply not go along. Their physical bodies will die and their soul energy registration automatically will take them to other destinations compatible with their free will choices in the darkness. Also, Many millions of other souls whose lives were made unbearably wretched by the few dark souls' treatment will leave Earth voluntarily before those days of joyous journeying begin, and they will embark upon their own self-selected growth experiencing, perhaps returning for lifetimes in restored Eden. Many more millions have already left for those reasons. Then finally, Susie said, can you state unequivocally that if people hold fast to love, compassion and non-judgmental attitudes, that there is no reason to fear what is ahead? Matthew said, proof far more than my stating so is your serenity and your assurance in the face of the headlines and the TV newscasts. Mother, the answer is coming from your soul, which is in touch with the universal mind, the God mind, are your clearest and purest guidance. Always those are the answers to see. Will there be moments when you cannot see light in its abundance, perhaps when catastrophes are ending many lives? Of course, because the human condition sometimes lets stress and doubt and anxiety temporarily dim the awareness of the divinity of each self. It is especially in those moments that you need to quietly look within for understanding, because on the surface, only the mundane event is apparent, and on the soul level, the primary cause and effect are known. If you ask me to give you one thought so profound and inclusive, so uplifting and inspirational, that nothing else would be necessary for you to remember, it is this. Know thy God self. And there we are. Quite a long extract from those messages that came out in September 2001. Perhaps a very good reminder at this time. And of course, we had come a long way with anchoring more light on the earth in the meantime. Now, I have a UFO encounter going back to the mid-60s. One of my extracts from the many old flying saucer reviews that I had. Again, these are not very big reports, but I think by the nature of them, they just give you an idea of the various things that have happened over a long period of time. I don't think they really make the news anymore. I suppose in a lot of people's minds, they've become commonplace. This one happened in France, in a place called Hérault. And the person concerned, who's not actually named, was a businessman who ran a garage in that area. And he was talking of an adventure he had 6 years earlier. And it was one evening in November 1962. And he said he was driving along a minor departmental road in Var, and it was dark and raining in torrents, but he was driving with his lights full on, and he said, rounding a bend, I saw 80 metres ahead a group of figures clustered in the middle of the road. I slowed down to avoid the group, and at the same moment it split into two parts suddenly and jerkingly. My window was down, and I leaned my head out slightly to see what was the matter. It was then that I saw beasts, some kind of bizarre animals, with the heads of birds and covered in some sort of plumage, which they were hurling themselves from two sides towards my car. Terrified, I wound up the window, accelerated like a madman, and then stopped 1.5 metres further on, which is what that's about, 5 feet, I suppose. I turned round and saw these things, these beasts, these nightmarish sort of beings, which were heading with a sort of flapping of wings towards a luminous dark blue object, which hung in the air over a field on the other side of the road. It resembled two plates upside down and placed one on another. On reaching it, these birds, as he calls them, were literally sucked into the underpart of the machine as if by a whirlwind. Then I heard a dull sound, and the object flew off at a prodigious speed and finally disappeared. Now, the person who translated the story said, I should add that the author of this story has told it only to a strictly limited number of people, simply for the fear of being thought quite mad. And he told the investigator that at the time he had never heard of UFOs and had never thought of relating these events to the UFO mystery. In spite of the fantastic nature of this story, he swears he did not dream it. It's said, in spite of all the efforts, the witness could not remember either the exact date or the place of the occurrence. So there we are. Short and sweet report there, but I think in all my time, that's only the second occasion on which I've heard about these bird people. I mean, we've heard of the insectoids and the reptilians and some others, the cat people, I believe. But that's a very unusual one, and I guess that long ago, people would have viewed that report with a lot of scepticism, and that's perhaps why you don't find it perhaps repeated again in later books or whatever. Anyway, that's the only one I'm going to read there, because the messages from Sheldon and Matthew were rather long, and they've taken up quite a bit of time, and I did want to get round to a little bit of general news. Now, something that happened in the States was reported in our papers in the UK, and goes back to July the 15th. I suppose it was recorded because it was a most remarkable story, something that couldn't happen in the UK, about a schoolboy called Abraham Cherrick, 16 years old, who was battling cancer, and he had apparently 3 months of grueling treatment last year, but he insisted on a herbal cure when his illness resurfaced. Apparently, social workers have now been given joint custody of him and want a court to force him to return to conventional drugs. And the report reads that if the judge agrees in the following week, and I don't know what decision was made, they said he could lock up Abraham if he fails to comply. But it reads on and says that the 6-foot-1 teenager, backed by his mother and father, said, "The first round of chemo almost killed me. There were nights when I didn't know if I'd make it. Another round at higher doses would kill me. No joke about that." And the youngster, who is from Chinook in Virginia, said he was willing to risk being jailed. And he said, "If they want to put me in juvenile detention, there's nothing I can do. I'll have to have faith that my parents will get me out. And if they take my parents away, I'll do everything in my power to help them." Apparently, it was a lump on his neck that was found to be Hodgkin's disease, which is a cancer of the lymph nodes. But he said, "Chemo left him bald, racked by fever, and too weak to walk. And since the disease resurfaced in February earlier this year, he has used an alternative treatment from a Mexican clinic involving herbs and a sugar-free organic diet." Now, to be fair, the American Cancer Society said there's no evidence it works, whereas, strangely enough, this is the rub, really, isn't it? 85% of the patients on conventional drugs they said that 85% of the patients on conventional drugs are alive 5 years later. I wonder if that's actually true. But I must say, from knowing about chemo from some of my friends, it is a most awful treatment, and I have seen some reports that say that it's not totally effective, because it kills off perfectly healthy cells as well as those with cancer, and because they can't actually direct it onto each cancerous cell, it's almost certain that some of the cells are left and therefore the cancer comes back. Apparently, recent tests on Abraham's tumour had found that it had grown. But he insisted on feeling extremely good. And he claimed that the method, this is the Mexican herbal type treatment, had worked on others. And he said, "I've done extensive research and read the testimonies of those who have been cured by alternative medicine. I've seen it firsthand." And the sad saga here went on because apparently in May, a judge deemed his parents guilty of neglect for backing him and ordered them to share custody of him with social workers. But his father, who's a father of five, said, "What it boils down to is this: does the American family have the right to decide the health of their child? Or is the government allowed to come in, determine that, and threaten to split our family up?" And he said, it was Abraham's decision to take this medicine. When I went to the clinic and met people that had been cured by this, we realized this was his best hope. However, even if it fails, his parents say they do not want him to be treated conventionally. And his mother finally added, if he doesn't have a very good chance of coming through chemo, which he doesn't, I'd rather him have quality of life. So there you are. I mean, I'm guessing that that one probably never made the press in the States at all. Because by their very nature, they don't want things that seem to be critical of the system. And we do get that type of censorship in the UK, but possibly not quite as seriously as you get in the States. Now, the other bit of news I have here is one about the world's top sweetener, which is aspartame, which apparently a report that originally appeared in The Independent on the 6th of June 1999, you can read this, I guess, on the website, which is www.independent.co.uk, was talking about this sweetener, which is the most widely used one in the world, and it's found in fizzy drinks and sweets, and they're claiming that it's being made by using a secret genetic engineering process, which some scientists claim needs further testing for toxic effects. And I won't read too much out of the report because that's the nub of it there, but they said the use of genetic engineering to make aspartame has stayed secret until now because there is no modified DNA in the finished product, and Monsanto, the pioneering GM food giant which makes aspartame, insists that it is completely safe. But some scientists fear that not enough is known about the process of making it. One of the two elements that make up the sweetener can be produced by genetically engineered bacteria, and scientists say that they cannot rule out toxic side effects. Apparently, the paper concerned The Independent on Sunday had found that Monsanto often uses genetically engineered bacteria to produce the sweetener at its US production plants. And Monsanto has stated that we have two strains of bacteria. One is traditionally modified and one is genetically modified. It's got a modified enzyme. It has one amino acid different. And again, Monsanto spokeswoman confirmed that aspartame for the US market is often made using genetic engineering, but the sweetener supplied to British food producers is not. But consumer groups say it is likely that some low-calorie products containing genetically engineered aspartame have already been imported into Britain. And apparently, UK MPs want the government to launch an inquiry to see how much US aspartame is coming into the UK. And Norman Barker, a Liberal Democrat spokesman, was that week going to write to the Food and Safety Minister to ask him to ensure that US aspartame is labelled as genetically modified. And he said, Monsanto's sweetener has turned sour. So, there's quite a bit more in that report, contemplating whether such a contaminating compound will be toxic, because it's not entirely unknowable until certain studies are carried out. So what happened from 1999 up to date, I'm not quite sure, but I'm guessing that one has plenty more to run. There was one event that I now call the ones that got away, which was allegedly the announcement, or rather the delivery of the Merkel letter, which should have proceeded on Friday, September the 1st, with the Nasara announcement planned for that particular evening. Now, I did mention this last week, and I was hoping that maybe something had surfaced that I could have got hold of that may have been a follow-up to that one, which came through Patrick Bellring, and that was the Nasara update on September the 1st. You can read it on the www.4winds10.com site. But unfortunately, I've had to cancel my server, who operates my internet and email services, and I'm going to have to wait a few weeks before I can be reconnected and do any more research on the internet, so it's a bit unfortunate. And of course, I'm not receiving emails, which sometimes give me more info. Now, I'll be able to get in, I think, here, one sort of rather quick message. And it's one that goes back a while, and someone sent it to me. It's in a book that I've actually read some time ago, but I thought it was the most wonderful message, and it came from Sananda. And it was in the book called Connecting with the Arcturians, which was written by David Miller. Wonderful book. And this message reads, "This is Sananda, my dear ones. You are all so beautiful in your spiritual array. I know you are all eager to come to the next realm. I am overseeing many different paths that are being made available to you. The Arcturian path, for instance, is a high path of pure consciousness. I want you to understand that your essence, your spirit, is really defined as pure consciousness, not as your physical body. It is the expansion of your consciousness that will help you to enter the fifth dimension. The Arcturians are not only guardians of pure spirit, but are actually soul masters who guide souls into the higher realms. Many of you wish to know when you can totally enter the fifth dimension. Many of you are ready to give up the physical plane life and enter into the gardens, come to the higher dimensional planets, live on Arcturus, or travel to the Pleiades. I can only tell you that your time for coming there is very near. Even though I will not give you a date, I can assure you that you are on the edge of this great evolutionary process on the Earth. The consciousness of the masses on this planet has shifted tremendously. Your hearts are more open and your ability to love is much greater. You are able to sense the love we have for you. Your participation in a group format will help to move the consciousness of the whole Adamic race. Therefore, it is very important to hold this evolutionary consciousness, as well as implant and anchor this higher consciousness on Earth. This is a sacred task and a sacred mission. Our Arcturian friends are helping to stabilize the planet, and they are guiding many into the path of ascension. This is Sananda." I thought it was a wonderfully uplifting message, and I think it's been realized from other messages from the Arcturians, and I do have one who once in a while puts a message through myself, and it's a wonderful energy. Also in the book, Connecting with the Arcturians, I can read you another short extract before my time is up. There was a part on planetary ascension, which is very important to us, and they said, "Clearly huge numbers on the Earth are ready to move into a high consciousness, ready to move up as a group. Some have referred to this as the number 144,000. This number was the number given at a certain point in history based on projections of how many people would be ready to move. Fortunately, that number is no longer correct. Many millions more are ready to move up as a group." Now, I thought that was worth reading out because I think occasionally some people have latched on to that number and maybe haven't read or are not aware of what was stated in those messages which are in the book. So that's where you read that. You can now read it in terms of millions. Now my time is all but up. I've enjoyed reading the messages this evening, and I think both Sheldon's and Matthew's have been very uplifting. I won't be here next week because I'm going on a week's holiday. But I will see you all in 2 weeks' time, and I will look forward to that, and I'm wondering what might have happened in the meantime, but I have a very strong suspicion that I won't as yet be reconnected to my email and internet service. So thank you for being with me. Do enjoy the next week or two, and thank you for being with me. God bless you all.